Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, April 22nd, 2017. This is episode 1382. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Square. Accept every card for the same rate and deposit your money fast with free chargeback protection. No commitment, no hidden fees. Sign up now and get free processing on your first $500 in sales at square.com/tech guy. Some terms apply. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Oh, it's that time. The Geek's Guide to the Universe. ADN everything with a chip in it. Computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches. Augmented reality. Boy, it was a big week for augmented reality. Facebook's developers conference, F8, said, you know, Facebook had said last year the next big thing was messenger bots. And what did they say? I think they said there's like 90,000 messenger bots now. 89,990 are useless, but there's, you know, 10 probably moderately useful messenger bots. This year, they mentioned bots, but not so much. It was all about augmented reality, which is funny because Facebook bought, as you remember, or you may remember 3 years ago, a little company called Oculus Rift. They spent more than $3 billion on it, and it's a virtual reality company. Virtual reality is the one where you don't see what's going on in the real world around you. You're wearing a screen on your forehead, on your head, with stereo vision, and it moves when your head moves. So it feels like it puts you in a room. It's like you put a hood on your head that only allows you to see this computer projection of a room. And you're in this room, and as you look around, you look around. You know, as your head moves, it looks around. Okay. And the Oculus Rift isn't real good at moving forward or anything. It just, in fact, you can't really. So you're just looking around. And then they've added touch controllers. And the big thing they announced for Oculus Rift was something called Spaces, which you can get virtual in beta right now, which is a virtual clubhouse for you and your buddies that makes you feel inept. Your arms are, because you're not, you are inept. You're in this very, you know, weird space. You can't get ept in the current, system because these devices are just primitive. So you're inept. So I don't, you know, I guess if your buddies are far away, right, and it's the only time you can hang out with them, it's dopey. It's dopey. So they did something with the Oculus Rift, but then they got all excited about augmented reality, and that actually is to me more interesting as well. Augmented reality, you can see what's going on around you. You see, you're wearing, let's say, kind of basically like shades, like eyeglasses, right? And you're looking around, and you see the room and everything. Except the computer is able to project like a heads-up display onto those glasses, stuff into the room, so you can look at a chair, and it could project somebody sitting in the chair. Or your Minecraft creation on the table in front of you, or a hole in the wall. And that's kind of interesting because you're still in the real world, but it's the computer kind of projecting onto the real world, augmenting it. And I guess Facebook's all in on it. It's the latest thing. You know, these tech companies, they're very trendy. They mostly because they're terrified, I think, of losing their supremacy. Facebook is definitely afraid that Snapchat's going to come along and become the social network for everybody under, 25, which means there'd be very little growth for Facebook, right? I suppose they could even put them out of business. Facebook knows that they practically buried MySpace. And Mark Zuckerberg, the founder and president and chairman and chief cook and bottle washer at Facebook, is very, I think, very nervous about Facebook and about what about Snapchat and what about Snapchat could do to it. And they tried to buy it. Remember, what Facebook's plan generally is, it's kind of like Microsoft in the 90s. Monopolies all work the same way. Facebook has not quite a monopoly, but a kind of an effective monopoly on whatever that thing it is. You know, your social network of getting together with family and friends. It's not, you know, you might say, well, Twitter. But Twitter is different, isn't it? Facebook is its thing. It's whatever that thing is. It has a pretty much of a monopoly on that. There's no number two Facebook, like second best Facebook. And so they want to keep that. And so when somebody comes along like Snapchat, they get nervous. Instagram came along. A lot of people using that to share photos. That's one of the things people do on Facebook. So Facebook spent $1 billion, arguably more than it was worth, maybe not, and bought it. WhatsApp came along, a messaging service that, you know, that's part of what Facebook does as well. And, of course, the problem is that even though these tools like Instagram and WhatsApp are limited, they could grow, right? So Facebook wants to nip them in the bud with their little saplings. So they bought WhatsApp. And as a measure of how scared Mark Zuckerberg is, remember, $1 billion for Instagram. A couple of years later, $24 billion for WhatsApp. And I don't think anybody could argue that that's a lot more than it's worth. Now, both have grown a lot. In fact, Facebook's been slowly tailoring Instagram to steal Snapchat customers because Facebook tried to buy Snapchat. And you have to think that they offered, you know, tens of billions of dollars. And the founders of Snapchat, kind of gutsy, said, no, we don't want your $20 billion. Would that be, just put that in your life. Somebody comes along and says, you got a nice boat out front. I'd like to buy that for $20 billion. It'd be hard to say no. You'd only say no if you thought, well, I'm going to make more on Snapchat than that. And that's a iffy proposition. So Facebook couldn't buy him, so now it's pretty clear they're going to bury him. They're going to bury him, first with Instagram, and now Facebook announced, what is the thing people like the most about Snapchat? Well, a few things. I mean, one of them, which Facebook will never do, is kind of vanishing messages. Oh, except that they're going to. Messages that you send to a friend nobody sees and they go away after a day, so you can't be held accountable. You know, no, and kids like this because they don't want pictures of, you know, them partying on their timeline that employers, future employers, could see, that kind of thing. They just like the idea that this is not an important communication. This is going to dissolve. So Instagram's trying that already, and I think Facebook might even try that. Watch. And then the other thing people love on Snapchat is those, have you played with it? It's actually really fun. You put your dog ears in a dog nose and your voice changes and you open your mouth and kibble comes out or something. Those, you know, in the tech, journalist community, we call it the vomiting rainbow effects. Cause what seems to be a very popular one is you open your mouth and a rainbow comes spewing out. Facebook added that. That's what they call augmented reality. Oh, and they say, oh, and look, you can now put it on the room, too. You could have a cloud floating in your room with your camera, and you look at the room with your camera, and there's clouds, except that Snapchat announced exactly the same thing the day before. Snapchat probably got, you know, the spying going on, right? They got information. Facebook's going to announce this tomorrow, and they said, well, quick, get ours out now. What a fight we're going to watch. And, you know, these kinds of fights are good. That's competition, and that's good for us as customers. In fact, it's much better than the alternative, which is that Facebook squashes everybody else and then becomes your only choice. So I'm rooting for the little guy, for Snapchat. Not such a little guy, for Snapchat. That was their big announcement at F8. And they say, we're going to make the camera in the Facebook app a platform. That means other developers can write software around the Facebook camera and the Facebook app. But I think developers look at that a little bit nervous because remember Facebook Games? A lot of companies made a lot of money, like Zynga, on Facebook Games. And Facebook just pulled the rug out from under them and said, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore. And they've done that numerous times. So I think developers might be saying, oh, well, there's a lot of money to be made here. But what if Facebook changes their mind? Then we're stuck. You can only do that so many times. Hey, I got the new Galaxy S8 Plus phone. It came on Thursday. I've been playing with it. Pretty much Friday was wasted fiddling with my phone. and I'll have a review. We'll also answer your calls. Heather Hammond's here. She's ready. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Let's talk tech. Whatever's on your mind. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Website is techguylabs.com. We've got a chat room there and more. Let's go to the phones right after this. Rum, bum, 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 Fiddling Friday. I should call it that, shouldn't I? Because these phones, they always come on Friday, don't they? It's Fiddling Friday. Fiddling Friday. So this is the always on screen. You have various screens. I put the analog clock on there. I don't know why. It's pretty. Everybody's talked about how pretty it is. Although it's taken me, it's a little weird, this tallness. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. Hello, Heather Hammond.
That's Lenny Kravitz.
Oh, it's right. Lenny Kravitz. I thought it was Earth, Wind, and Fire.
It sounds like that other song.
Hearts of Fire. I love Lenny Kravitz.
Has someone done a mashup? That's a great idea.
If somebody has the skills, do it. That's all I can say. Go to it.
Do you know what?
What, Heather Hammond?
LinkedIn told me that we've been together 4 years.
It's our anniversary.
We're old.
What is the fourth anniversary? Do you get a clock? I put a new clock over your shoulder.
I think it's a platinum iPhone.
Yeah, platinum iPhone. Sure it is. Sure it is.
Oh, you're so good to me.
Sure it is. Hey, you've been answering the phone, I presume. I don't know. I'm guessing. Do we have somebody to talk to?
Mm-hmm. Computing has not been good to Art. We need some help.
Art. Uh-oh. Thank you, Heather Hammond.
Sure.
And happy anniversary. Hello, Art. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Need some help.
Uh-oh.
Listener.
Uh-oh.
Oh, by the way, I love your shirt.
Oh, this is my Oaxaca shirt from my good friend, Winton Churchill.
It is gorgeous.
Yeah, he sends me these shirts from San Miguel de Allende, and I love them. They're a little, it's a little bit bold.
Colorful.
Yes. Talk about vomiting rainbows. It looks like that happened to my shirt.
Yes.
Thank you, though.
I wonder if you can help me. I came home the other night, opened up my computer, went to open up a web page, and instantly I knew I was in trouble.
Uh-oh.
It didn't load right. It grabbed, it took control of my Chrome. It wouldn't let me shut down at all. I logged out of that user, which was not an administrator, and went to an administrator account. Tried to shut down Chrome, couldn't shut down Chrome.
Well, but the first thing I'm going to say is don't panic and don't. Yeah, okay. You don't need to delete Chrome. All of this can be accomplished with JavaScript. In other words, it's not necessarily harmful to your system. I think when you have this kind of experience, you might say, "Oh my gosh, the bad guy's already invaded my system," and it's possible, but not likely. Let me give you the mechanism you get here. Was this a site you'd been to before?
Yes.
Okay. So. A site can be hacked, a website can be hacked, just like your computer can be hacked. In fact, somewhat more easily, because it's online and public. And if the software running the website has not been kept up to date, it may have exploits, just like your operating system might have exploits that can be used by a bad guy. What bad guys do is they run scanners all the time, searching the web for out-of-date versions of, WordPress and, PHP used to be a big problem on forums because forum software never got updated. And so they look for these, they find them, and they exploit them. And usually the exploit means putting a exploit kit on the server. And you can buy these as cheaply as $50 on the black market. Believe it or not, they put these together, bad guys who make more money selling to other bad guys than they do hacking things. They put these together and you buy these exploit kits. And you embed them on a website. And they contain hundreds of exploits that take advantage of people's home computers. Flaws in Windows or Macintosh. Or Android. And they look for those. And if they find a vulnerable computer, then they can infect it. So, if you haven't been keeping your Windows up to date, or if you use Windows XP, which isn't being kept up to date, Windows Vista, which isn't being... Then you might be vulnerable to these kits, right? But chances are you keep your Windows up to date, right?
Yes, and it's Windows 10.
So you're not going to be it's highly unlikely that you're going to be bit by that. The other thing they do on these sites is they inject JavaScript into the front page, and the JavaScript is what takes over the browser, does pop-ups, locks, you know, means you can't close the browser window. All of that can be done.
That's it. Yeah,
yeah, and all of that can be done without modifying your computer, just running programs in the browser. So what you need to, it's not a big deal. You might, you know, that website needs to be fixed if it's a legit website. They know by now. That's one of the reasons you occasionally will see a warning in your browser.
I must have typed something wrong because I went into it later on a tablet and it was fine.
Ah, okay. That's another thing that, and bad guys do this all the time. They take advantage of typos.
Right.
So instead of you type Twitter, but instead you accidentally, you know, type an L instead of a W, and you go to Twitter, and that's a bad site. And that would be loaded with JavaScript pop-ups and ads and all sorts of junk. However, unless it's taking advantage of a flaw in your operating system, it wasn't able to infect your operating system. So all you have to do is open the Task Manager and close Chrome.
Oh, no.
Did it modify Chrome?
Well, it wouldn't let me close Chrome in the Task Manager. I tried that.
Or reboot the computer. I presume at some point you tried that.
Actually, I have not rebooted it. Yeah, reboot it off.
Yeah, or you turn it off. So unless this would mean that there was a vulnerability they took advantage of. You can't modify Chrome unless there's a hole in Chrome. But if there was a hole, and you know, this is why browsers now automatically update. Chrome keeps itself up to date whether you know it or not. The only problem can be sometimes, you know, it does require a restart of Chrome. And if you never, ever close Chrome, it never gets updated. Same thing with Firefox, Internet Explorer, Microsoft's Edge browser. Good idea to close those browsers at the end of the day so that when you open it up, it'll update.
Okay.
I would say if you turn on your computer, it's going to be fine. If you see anything weird, though, like if you're – so try going to Google. If you know your search is modified and goes to some other search page or you get ads in your browser and stuff, then you might want to look at your browser settings. Make sure their homepage wasn't changed. That cannot – I don't believe that can be done in JavaScript. That would require a flaw, an exploit in Windows or Chrome. Windows is pretty secure these days. Microsoft's done a great job of updating that.
And this was the Microsoft, you know, call Microsoft, you know, Microsoft has detected this.
Yeah, this makes
with your credit card.
This didn't fool you. It just annoyed you. But it fools enough people that they'd keep doing it. So I think you hit the nail on the head. There was probably a typo in the URL. All of the, you know, all of the major websites, people have registered domain names that are near enough so that if you typed Google with 3 0s, for instance, you would get a malicious website. That's very, very common. But they can't do anything unless you're not up to date. And I think you're up to date.
And I wasn't running as administrator, so they can't.
Again, you're safe. Oh, good. Art, I'm so impressed.
I listen.
You are locked down, so you don't have ransomware. You know, just to
and
be
sure. Carbonite.
Oh, you're so safe. So just to be sure, unplug, if you're really nervous, before you turn the machine back on, just disconnect it from the internet.
That's what I thought of.
Yeah, turn it on, and look around, and if everything seems normal, which it will, then you can go ahead and get on the internet. And I don't think you'll have any lasting effect from this.
Well, except that I wasn't able to log out of Chrome.
Maybe. Yeah, they can hijack Chrome. That's not, they can do that. Your task manager should be able to kill it. That's a little interesting. Or you right-click on the icon and you force quit or whatever. If that doesn't work, well, maybe. Right. Just look carefully and see. I think you're going to be fine.
One quickie. On your website, I saw something about bleepingcomputer.com.
Good site.
Is that a trusted site?
Very trusted.
Okay, because they talk about this kind of bite, and they give like 20 steps. And
well, just turn it on first. Yeah, you don't need malware bites or anything. Just try it first. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Can I get Paco?
Here he is, the singing AV guy. Tuba playing Scott Wilkinson. Hey, Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek.
Hey, Leo.
How was the Ren Fair?
Huzzah!
Did you play your sack butt?
No, not this time. I might be going back to play, but this time I was just
just a visitor to the Shire, and
the ladies always have their eye on the sack butt player. They get all the girls.
It's true. It's true. I won't deny that.
Okay. So you are gonna. There is something really exciting. If you have, and I'm not sure what you need for this, at least a 4K TV, right?
Well, actually, you don't. I wrote a piece about it on AVS Forum. This Wednesday, this week, the NAB show is happening in Las Vegas, right. National Association of Broadcasters.
Right.
And NASA has come in with NAB to do something pretty special. It's the first ever live 4K stream from space.
Ooh.
The International Space Station has on board a bunch of cameras, as it turns out, one of them being a Red Epic Dragon, which is one of these new generation
that's
of like, digital.
That's 8K, isn't it?
Well, it's 6K, actually.
6K, okay.
But they're only going to do 4K.
The really thing, I mean, it's not surprising that if a camera's up there that can do it, it would be the bandwidth to do it. It's the first 4K live stream
from
space.
Exactly. And now they're
if you remember when Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon.
How grainy and fuzzy
that was, like minus 0.5K. I mean, that was worst. So it's kind of amazing that they can get a ultra high def picture coming from space, which I
really
quite
amazing. Not only that, they're encoding it in the latest compression codec called HEVC, high efficiency video codec, otherwise known as H.265. And believe it or not, they are sending it to Earth at 18 megabits per second.
Wow.
Which is really small. So they're sending it to Earth, to Johnson Space Center. The Amazon Web Services is heavily involved in this with their subsidiary called Elemental Technology.
We use Elementals for, which is a very expensive encoder for our streams as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We don't do 4K streams because nobody would want to watch me and you in 4K. But we do live stream video from the... and audio from the studios.
Right. And Elemental is a big player in that market. Yeah. And so one of the demonstrations of this, that this whole thing is supposed to represent, is cloud-based processing.
It's so just an ad for Amazon, right?
It kind of is, yeah, I'll admit. But it's still pretty cool.
Now, the problem is you have to be at NAB to see it.
Oh, no, you don't.
Ooh.
In fact, you can watch it anywhere.
Says.
You can watch it online. You do need a 4K display in order to see it in 4K. The good news is it's being streamed in a what's called a multi-bitrate format. So if you don't have a 4K display or you don't have enough bandwidth at your end, your downstream bandwidth, then it'll downshift into 2K or even SD.
Okay. Okay.
You know, so you can see it. But if you have a 4K display and you have enough bandwidth coming into your home, and interestingly enough, even though it's taking only 18 megabits per second to come down from the space station, in order for you to see it in 4K, you need at least 45 megabits per second into your home. Part of the reason is, and I tried to find out and I couldn't find out why, it's being encoded in this high efficiency video coder called HEVC to come down from the space station, but it's getting transcoded into an older format.
Oh, that's too bad.
Called AVC or H.264 to be sent along to people who want to watch it. Huh. And so that requires 45 megabits per second. So that tells you something right there in terms of efficiency of codec.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
are we going to see? By the way, we didn't. You know, this is pretty typical of home theater. Oh, I don't care what the content
is.
I just want to see the quality.
See
yeah.
No, this is going to be a live discussion between the CEO and founder of Elemental with the commander of the space station, an astronaut up there. And they're going to be talking in real time, probably with some delay, I would assume. But
they're not that far up. I mean, they're what?
Well, they're 250 miles.
Yeah, yeah, a couple
like
hundred
that.
Miles. So it's not like...
Well, yeah, it's not going to be seconds. It's not going to be like talking to Mars.
Right.
But,
it's more like talking to, Germany.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so the CEO of Elemental is going to be at NAB.
Yeah.
At a room. This is on Wednesday, by the way. This coming Wednesday at 10:30 in the morning.
Feels a little bit like an ad, I have to say. I didn't realize that's what they're going to be doing, is interviewing the guy who makes this technology.
Well, it's not that they're going to be interviewing him. He's going to be having a conversation with the commander of the space station. And it is a bit of an ad, but to tell you the truth, I think it's more of an ad for NASA than it is for Amazon.
That they have this capability?
That they have this capability, that they're using 4K to examine things on the space station, to share things in real time with colleagues on the ground.
I presume they're going to have pictures from, you know, like of Earth and stuff instead.
Oh, I can't imagine.
I would hope.
Sure. Of course.
Yeah, okay.
I would have to imagine that as well.
All right. Okay.
Anyway, so if you go to my avsforum.com, and the story is right there up near the top of the homepage.
Do I have to have a web browser in my TV to watch this?
No, you can do it from a computer.
And then send it to the TV.
Send it to the TV.
But
yeah,
will that... I wonder if that'll degrade the signal.
Well, it depends on what your connection is from the...
Is there a... you know, I have a 4K Roku. You know, when I've got a 4K TV, you have to upgrade everything. I have a 4K Roku. Mm-hmm. I have a 4K Android TV, the NVIDIA Shield. Will I be able to do it on them?
Well, I'm not sure. It depends on...
If they have a NASA channel?
If they have a NASA channel. Actually, this is... The website to go to, you can find on my thing, but it's live.awsevents.com.
It's an ad.
It's kind of an ad, but it's cool.
Yeah, no, it's good. And if you have a 4K TV, you're desperate for anything.
So yeah.
And then
the extension after that is /NASA 4K.
NASA 4K. Okay.
Yeah, and that'll get you to the page where you will be able to watch this event. I think it's pretty cool. Yes, it's somewhat of an ad. It's for NAB, so they're doing some demonstrations for the broadcasting professionals who go to NAB.
Well, that's frankly going to drive a lot of people to that event, which is probably what they want. NASA also has a lot of non-live. I mean, the only difference here is live, right? They have a lot of non-live 4K content
you can watch. That's correct. They do.
Because they do have the cameras up there. This is the thing that's cool about this is that they're in real-time streaming. And, yeah, if you compare this to 1969 and Neil Armstrong stepping on the moon in black and white, wouldn't it be cool to have that in 4K?
Oh, man. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
It would be awesome.
Maybe when we get on Mars, we could do that. By then, it'll be 80K. I don't know what it'll be.
Well, yeah. And it won't be live, that's for sure.
Yeah, because of the delay. Well, it could be live. It just won't be two-way live.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, there was a 7-second delay to the moon. I mean, you know,
it's. Yeah.
But we did watch that. We did watch that live. I remember getting up and
I do too.
When I was a little kid, I was 13, mm-hmm. watching that July 1969. I'll never forget that. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a generation coming that they're going to have that memory for the first step on Mars.
Yeah. Won't that be amazing?
Right. That'd be very
cool. The delay here is not only because it's so far away, the space station. It's not that far, 250 miles, but it's all the processing
coding
that's going on. Yeah, it's the decoding and the recoding and the transcoding.
So if you watch our stream, you're going to watch it about 20 seconds, give or take, delayed because we have to churn on it to get it small enough so that we can send it down the pipe. That's what the elemental does. Scott Wilkinson, read more at his website, avsforum.com. And listen to his podcast, twit.tv/HTG. Thanks, Scott.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Ha 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 ha. Alrighty, Scotty. Alrighty.
Thank you. Chip CDM 4K from space. That'll drive the aliens crazy.
We got the elemental talking to the commander of the space station.
Yeah.
That's a Twitch show.
That's a Twitch show, it is.
Talking heads.
Now, I presume, I hope they're going to point the cameras outside and
out the cupola, they call it.
You know, we'll be watching it, of course, but.
I'm
a little disappointed that it's so much of an ad for elemental. I did not realize that. Wow. Those things are elemental. What was it? $25,000, $35,000? And it's expensive. It's just a PC, really. But it has special proprietary software.
Special stuff.
Yeah. All right. All yours, Scotty.
Thank you so very much.
I'm make sure this is all pointless.
Dr. Mom, 3 seconds each way. Mars is over 3 minutes away. I thought it was longer than that. I thought Mars was more than 3 light minutes away. Of course, it depends on the relative position of Mars and Earth. But in any event, CO Bra says, I still like Onkyo. We'll purchase an upgrade to the new TRX NR676, which has better specs than the Denon equivalent in price. That may be. Onkyo is also a great brand. Their reputation got tarnished for a while because of HDMI board problems, but I'm sure those have been fixed by now. As for longevity of the two products, my impression is that Denon probably does a little better in that regard. But Onkyo is a fine brand. There's no question about it. And if you've got one and you like it, that's great. Oh, but Marsworm, speaking of Mars, has a TX NR676, and it has issues. What issues are those, Marsworm? That would be good to know. So, yeah, anybody got any other questions? I'm looking through the chat room here. And, Emily the Strange has a question about antennas. How much do you know? I know something about antennas. They do. I'm surprised you don't really talk about them. Do they really matter? They do. Because we have terrestrial broadcasting. We have, but it's only HD. Only HD right now. But we do have terrestrial broadcasting, and antennas are the way to get it. And that can be a much better picture even than what you get on cable or satellite, because it's somewhat less compressed. It's still compressed, but somewhat less so. However, we just last week, I think, had this spectrum auction, and a lot of public television stations sold off a bunch of their spectrum to the cell phone companies so that they could get an infusion of cash. And I've always maintained also that any broadcaster will crank up the compression so that it takes less space so that they can put more content in their available bandwidth. They crank it down as much as they can till they get complaints. I've heard this. They crank it down so that it gets worse and worse and worse until their complaint calls reach a certain threshold. And they go, okay, we've done too much. Now let's crank it back a little bit, and that's where we can stay. Still in all, I think over-the-air broadcasting looks better generally than cable or satellite, and certainly better than streaming. So antennas are still a very important thing. And once we get ATSC 3.0, probably next year, we'll hear a lot about it at NAB, then we're going to then antennas are going to become important.
Can you stick around for the top?
I sure can.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I always feel like I'm in a baseball game when I hear the first few notes of that. It's become a sports anthem. We're riding the crazy train here with Manny in Ashtabula. Hey, Manny, how are you?
Oh, not bad. How about yourself, Leo?
I always wanted to say this. How are things in Ashtabula?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just passing through here, you know?
Just passing through. I'm great, and I'm glad you're on the phone, and what can I do for you?
Well, I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and I go coast-to-coast, border-to-border.
Okay.
And I have all sorts of gadgets in here, iPhones, Mac Pro, and I use an inverter, you know, to
sure.
Charge up my
because you've got DC coming from your battery, but those devices want AC power.
Right. Now, is there a recommended inverter out there for our gadgets? Because let's face it, sometimes if we get the wrong inverter, it tends to overheat
right.
Some of our gadgets, as I've experienced in the past. And I don't want my truck to catch on fire.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Well, in theory, I mean, you're using the name brand stuff, iPods and so forth. In theory, they're not going to take more wattage than they can handle. And if they're heating up, that's just normal. They shouldn't. It's not. You don't have a Galaxy Note 7 issue where It's going to keep heating up until it explodes. All well-made electronics nowadays have circuitry in there to prevent overcharging. So the problem is, you know, lithium-ion batteries, if they are overcharged, will explode. Actually, all batteries will. And so all well-made devices, you got to be careful sometimes about, you know, kind of cheap Chinese knockoffs, but all well-made devices have circuitry built in there to prevent overcharge. Overcharge isn't good for the battery, even if it didn't get hot enough to burn. It's a bad thing. So they are, you know, there's a lot of circuitry in the modern devices to prevent them from discharging fully and from overcharging. So I wouldn't worry about that. I presume you're plugging the official adapters into the inverter, not using third-party adapters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So all of those adapters, you know, most of them are designed, you know, they're USB, really. So most of them are designed to do 5 volts, and then, because that's the standard for USB is 5 volts, and then the amperage varies to give you the wattage you need. So if you have an iPad, for instance, it wants 11 watts of charging. So their chargers are a little bit bigger, and they do 5 volts. They can't do more than that. By 2.2 amps to give you 11 watts of power. Volts times amps equals watts.
Okay.
And so I think that the only risk would be if you're using a bad third, you know, a third-party adapter that's really cheesy. Don't buy them at the truck stop. You know how they have – it's so funny now. You everywhere you go, every convenience store, they have a rack of USB accessories.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Stay away from those. But if you're using Apple's official charger and it's, you know, and the cable doesn't really matter, but, you know, you're going to need a good, you know, get a good cable. I think you're fine. I don't think you'd have to worry about the inverter. The inverter may try to give it more voltage, but the power adapter is going to reject it. It's only going to take what it needs.
That's good to know.
Yeah. It's like a pipe. You know, they always use plumbing as an analogy for electricity. You got a narrow pipe. You can't, you can't really do much to make it, you know, to gush power through it. It's going to slow you down.
Okay.
All right. I don't know anything. And I say that because I'm punning, because I know nothing about inverters. But if anybody does and wants to call and talk about, you know, what are the best inverters, I would welcome that. 8888 Ask Leo, and keep listening. And drive safely, man. It's nice to hear from you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks again.
Truckers are the most often the most technologically sophisticated. You guys have got everything in there. It's cool. I frequently get calls from people who want to have printers in their cab. I'm not sure why you'd want to print stuff, but that's a common question. Do you have a printer in your truck?
No, I do not.
Oh, you're lagging. You got to get going.
Yes, I know.
Hey, great to talk to you. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Manny. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm going to talk to Mike in Portland in just a second. It says Portland, Minnesota. Mike, Portland, Maine. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you? Yes, it's definitely not Minnesota.
They changed the N to E on me. Now I see.
Yeah.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, I'm more of a minestrone guy anyway.
Me too. Actually, I'm with you on that.
Hey, I finally was able to install Linux Mint in my Dell Latitude D531.
Aren't you the geek? Wow.
Oh, I am an absolute geek. But I have a question for you. As I was installing it, needed to partition the drive, and it was going to partition it with two-thirds of the drive going to Windows XP and one-third of it going to Linux. And I said, I'm not going to use XP anymore. Let me just make that smaller.
This is, by the way, a great use case for putting Linux, free open source operating system, on a PC. If it's an XP machine, it's a great idea to update it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So I made the partition as small as I could for Windows and had it start doing the partition, and it was grinding away and did what it was supposed to do until it came back and said, cannot partition as you wish or something like that. And okay, that's fine, so I was going to redo it. So I started it over again, and I turned the computer off and turned it back on. Windows disappeared. That's fine.
Do you want to keep Windows on there at all?
No, that was perfect.
Then don't even do a Windows partition. Just
I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. And it's gone now. But what I want to know is, what happened?
Well, there's many a slip twixt the cup and the lip. I don't know. It may be that in the partitioning process, you clobbered more than you thought. Partitioning is always a little bit risky. That's taking a physical drive and configuring it logically. And, you know, modern drives are actually lying to the operating system. The geometry of modern drives is so confusing, even to the most modern operating systems, that they have to just lie. They say, no, I don't have that many cylinders. I don't have that many sections. No, you're pay no attention to that. I'm a 100-cylinder drive. And so it could very well be that in the partitioning process, what looked like it was a unused partition was used or something like that. I wouldn't worry. When I install Linux, especially on an XP machine, I guess you might want to keep Windows. You're doing what is the hardest thing to do, which is a dual boot system. And if it's your first time with Linux, do it on a computer that you don't mind blasting Windows out. Dual booting, having two operating systems on one machine, it's not exactly Black Diamond, but it's more advanced. It's intermediate. And there's lots of places you can go wrong in the partitioning and the setup. It's very common. I think probably what happened is that Windows partition is still there. But in the process of installing Linux, you clobbered the boot record that would normally say, okay, you got two operating systems. Which one do you want? In other words, your boot manager is gone. Windows has its own boot manager, but it doesn't. You know, generally, if you want to use the Windows boot manager, you have to install it last, Windows last, because anything else will wipe it out. So my suggestion, if you want to recover the Windows partition, I would guess it's still there. You want to use a boot manager that will detect it. There are a number of those that do that. I'll have to look and see I think Refind is the one most people are recommending these days. It's an EFI boot manager. You almost certainly have an EFI machine. Well, maybe not if it's an XP machine. In any event, easiest thing to do is not to do that, not to try to boot Windows. Just use the whole drive for Linux. When Mint asks you, say, use the whole drive and set it up as you want, you'll be much happier. You won't be able to boot into Windows, but you don't want to. Windows XP, be better off not using it. And let me know how you like Mint. I think you'll like it, Mike. Mint is the Linux design for Windows users, basically. Ubuntu and Mint. Mint is kind of on top of Ubuntu. Are easiest to use, easiest to install, and a great place to start in your Linux journey. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Elgato probably, well, you might be able to. Elgato wants to know if he can run his corporate LAN, corporate VPN software on Linux. Do you use the built-in Windows VPN stuff? If you do, maybe not. But if you use like the Cisco, almost always they have a Linux thing. All right, Mr. Scott Wilkinson.
Woohoo!
You're going to take over. I do not need lunch because I'm not eating anything. I've been fasting. I'm doing the new kid. All the kids are doing it. All the kids are doing it. So, yeah, all yours, my friend.
Why, thank you so much. I just stopped my clock there. Having some good times in the chat room, as always. Dr. Mom looked up how far Mars is away. Turns out to be anywhere from 4 to 24 light minutes, depending on where the relative position of Earth and Mars. So I was thinking 20 minutes, and that's kind of at the outer end of how far apart they get. Lumpy was asking if TV manufacturers will support 4K over-the-air broadcast, since it's kind of removing tuners from TVs these days. And I answered, yeah, I think so, because I think they are going to support 4K, which really is called ATSC 3.0. And I think they are going to support it because the whole industry is way behind it. Also, we're in a transitionary period right now. We don't have ATSC 3.0 yet. We're going to see a lot of demos of it at NAB. And it will be deployed, I think, next year. I don't think it's going to come this year. I think it's going to come next year. But the manufacturers are looking at that and saying, hey, you know what? That's coming soon. And if we put an ATSC 1.0 tuner, which is what they currently have, into our TV, then that's going to be obsolete in a year. That's not going to work even, maybe, in a couple of years. There'll be a transitionary overlapping period, but still. So I suspect, and I'm only speculating here, that it could be that the manufacturers are saying, you know what, we're going to take tuners out now because in a couple of years they're going to be obsolete. and we're going to start putting ATSC 3.0 tuners in once the spec is completely finalized and everything's locked down and the silicon is there and all that stuff. So that's what I think is going to, what might be around that kind of thing. Marsworm was having trouble with his Onkyo receiver, saying that HDMI pass-through stopped working. So you've got a, say, a disc player or a satellite box or something coming in by HDMI to the receiver and then out via HDMI to the display. And that pass-through wasn't working. And the only way he could fix it was just unplugging it. I didn't even know that the signal would pass through the receiver when it was unplugged. That's kind of interesting. So that's, I'm going to have to look into that. Esol just bought a Vizio E-Series, which I think was a great choice. It's 4K, HDR capable, and what's called full array local dimming backlighting. Now, which means that the LEDs are in an array behind the screen rather than along the edges. All Vizio TVs have that. Characteristic. And the E-Series, there aren't very many zones. Those zones, groups of the LEDs behind the screen can be dimmed or brightened automatically depending on whether that part of the image is bright or dark. And so the more zones you have, the better, because then you can brighten up behind smaller and smaller portions of bright areas of the image. With the E-Series, I don't recall. There might be only like 16 zones. I'm sort of semi-remembering that. But that's not very many. As opposed to, say, the Hisense UMAX 85, which has 448 zones. Now, it's an 85-inch TV. It's big. But the P-Series, the Vizio P-Series, has 128. The M-Series has 64. Probably the E-Series might have 32, so if they go in that kind of progression. So it might be 32. It's still not very many compared to 128, which is much, much better. So let's see here. Friendly Manitoba is asking if I've reviewed any new non-LG OLEDs. Interestingly, as soon as I'm done here, I'm heading over to a friend's house who has one, actually whose laboratory, who has one, and I'm going to be looking at it very closely and writing about it next week. So that's going to be the Sony A1e, the only non-LG OLED that's available, and it's only now just starting to become available. So I'm about to head over and check one out at some length. I'm really looking forward to that. Marsworm, I was incorrect. Sorry. It went unplugged. It doesn't pass HDMI when unplugged. I just don't want the AVR on full power mode. Keeping it simple. Okay. I misunderstood. Pardon me. Swamp Rat says, I have an outdoor antenna on a 30-foot mast. All right. With a preamplifier and an amplifier. Wow. You really got it good. Wondering if you might guess as to what causes my picture to drop when some but not all vehicles drive past the house. Wow, I don't know. That's pretty strange. A 30-foot mast, for heaven's sakes, it's way the heck up there. Now, depending on where you are with respect to the broadcast tower, I don't know where you live, Swamp Rat, but I do know that my friend Tom Norton, when he lived in L.A., he lived right up against a mountain. Basically. And even on a 30-foot mast, if he had had one, he did have a mast. I forget how tall it was. But even then, he couldn't really pick up over the air very well. And I suppose maybe, you know, if there's a road going by your house that's between you and the broadcast tower and the road maybe is up on a hill and the cars maybe block for a minute. I've never heard of that one before. That's pretty strange. But it could, my first guess would be that it has something to do with the relationship between your house or the antenna, the road, and the broadcast tower and where you are, what those all are looking like. Let's see. There was one earlier here. I only have 90 seconds left. Web 2639, what are the two things I shouldn't miss at NAB this year? Well, certainly that that live broadcast, even though it's somewhat advertorial, it's still pretty darn cool. I would go to that. The Future of Cinema Conference is happening this weekend. If you're there now, I would go to the Future of Cinema Conference. I think that will be really, really good. I'm sorry I'm not there this year. I just didn't work out. Northeast Louisiana, Swamp Rat. Okay. Let's see. A Jammin' Man is in the market for a new TV. What would be your choice between the Sony XBR55X900 and the Samsung MU8000? That's a tough one. They're both edge lit. The MU8000, the Sony will have, and here we go. I'm going to have to leave you hanging on.
No, answer. Come on, you can't leave us like that.
The Sony will have HLG HDR, whereas the Samsung will not.
There you go.
All right.
Thank you, Scotty. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. See you then.
Bye-bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yes, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality, self-driving cars, all that cool stuff that the internet, or the world, I should say, is bringing us, the new technologies, anything with a chip in it. My phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach me. Just use Skype or something like that. Skype out to that number. It's toll-free. It shouldn't cost you anything. 8888-ASK-LEO. So I got the new Samsung Galaxy. I got the S8, and I would recommend if you're going to get this to get the S8, which is bigger, except it's not bigger. It's hard to describe. If you get a chance to go to the phone store and look at the new Galaxy S8 phones, you can choose the sizes. But what's interesting about the S8, which is, you know, they call it a 6.2-inch screen, and you know, technically it's 6.2 inches diagonally, but they've done a weird aspect ratio, and I think this might be smart, maybe not. It takes a little getting used to. It's taller than previous phones. And so that's one way they get more screen real estate into there. Now, that's a little strange. Some applications don't use it all. And if you watch video, you know, widescreen 16:9 video, you'll have black bars on the sides because it's not 16:9. It's more like 16:8. It's kind of a weird aspect ratio. But the reason they do that is you can have a lot of screen but hold it in one hand. It's narrow. And if you kind of looks narrow. Beautiful screen. Of course, Samsung really has mastered the Super AMOLED screen. This is as gorgeous a screen as I've ever seen. Super bright. The blacks are very dark. It's curved, but not as curvy as the previous S7 or the Note 7. The curved screen doesn't go all the way. You know, the Note 7 and the S7, you had a very tiny little, you know, frame outside of it. This has a little bit more metal on the edge, makes it easier to hold. So, you know, the curve is more aesthetic than it is giving you screen real estate, but it is aesthetic. And this is by the way, I think that going to be the standard for phones going forward is bezel-less, they call it, design, which means almost no frame, just a tiny little frame at the bottom and the top and nothing on the sides. So the phone is almost all screen. The new iPhone, that's the rumors, the new top-of-the-line iPhone will be all screen. LG has done that with the G6. I think more and more you're going to see bezel-less screens. We've got the technology. And then that way you maximize screen size without making a giant phone. This S8 Plus, which is the 6.2-inch version of the Samsung Galaxy S8, is actually not bigger than the iPhone 7 Plus, which is only a 5.5-inch screen. It feels smaller. It weighs a little bit less. It's not much thicker. So you're not giving up. You're not getting a giant phone, I guess. And I have had 6-inch screens before that are wider, fatter, and they're really hard to hold. This is easy to hold in one hand. You can even operate it with one hand, I guess. It's a bit of a stretch to get your thumb all the way across. Samsung has put roughly the same camera in this phone as they did in the S7 and the Note 7, which was an extremely nice camera. Really liked it. But there is a slightly new sensor, and so far I've been very happy with the photo results. I'll have to take some more pictures and post them somewhere so you can see them. But so far I've been very happy. The photos are, you know, every top-of-the-line phone now is doing pretty good photography. The Pixel from Google, the S8 from Samsung, the iPhone 7, roughly equal. This, you know, the differences are more personal taste than actual quality differences. Although, I guess the folks at DxO who rate cameras give the Samsung Galaxy S the best. Glass back over metal, which means it'll be a little bit of fragile. You're probably going to want to get a case for it. I'll tell you some of the negatives. In order to make it a bezel-less display, they had to take the fingerprint reader and the home button off. There's no physical home button anymore, just the on-screen home button, which is fine. I don't mind that. But they had to put the fingerprint reader somewhere else, so they put it on the back, and they did not do as good a job on the back as, say, Google, which Google has a nice fingerprint reader right in the middle of the back. It's very natural when you hold the phone to tap it. Samsung has put their fingerprint reader, it's a rectangle. It's as if they took the old home button and put it on the back. And it's right next to the camera, which means I hit the camera almost every time. It's hard to hit their fingerprint reader. I get frequent fail. I have to try again. So it's not as fast. They have added face recognition, which works almost instantly. Iris recognition, which is as good as in terms of security as fingerprint reading and works very quickly. So that you have other ways to unlock the phone, but you still want that fingerprint reader to work for Samsung Pay, Android Pay, and other things. And I wish it were a better fingerprint reader. They've also added a new button. There's the traditional volume rockers and the on-off switch, but they've added a third button. They call it the Bixby button. You press it, and it launches Samsung's assistant, Bixby. Well, supposedly, it's not launching it right now. Hey, Bixby! Well, it doesn't matter because Bixby's not ready for prime time anyway. The voice assistant part isn't there. Samsung says, oh, we'll get that later. We couldn't get it in time. So right now what you get is a series of cards, much like the Google Now cards, almost identical. You know, and with a Samsung ad in there. You know, I'm not sure I really understand why Samsung does this. Google's voice assistant is excellent. Google Assistant is on here. You can use, you know, OK Goog to activate it. So it doesn't, it's, now you've got two. And I think most people are just going to use the Google one, especially since Bixby comes, the Bixby button doesn't do anything much right now because Bixby isn't ready yet. And in fact, every time I press this, one time I pressed it, it crashed the whole phone. So clearly Bixby is far from ready for prime time. So we now have an extraneous button. Samsung's also done something very annoying, which is initially this button could be remapped. It'd be great if I could remap it to the Google Assistant. I wouldn't mind having a Google Assistant button. But they apparently have modified the firmware on the phone so that you can't remap it anymore. What? What? That's annoying. So those are a couple of negatives. And of course, Samsung, as usual, has modified the user interface of Android to match their aesthetic. You know, and if you're used to Samsung phones, it won't bother you. It's not a lot of difference. But I Samsung makes such great hardware. Wouldn't it be nice if they offered, as they have in the past, a version of their phone that just had the Google software on it, no specialized Samsung customizations? You'll also find customizations from the carrier you buy it from. I bought mine from AT&T, and so it has a lot of AT&T apps, most of which you can disable. The camera app, you probably would want to use a Samsung's camera app because they've added a lot of features, including something called Bixby Vision. When you turn on Bixby Vision and point your camera at something, it will search for that product online. Remember, didn't Amazon do this with their Fire Phone? I don't know how well that works. And it's not necessarily something I find particularly useful. So I guess you could use Bixby Vision. It feels like Samsung junks their phone up with kind of unnecessary stuff. However, as many have said already, might be the best phone in terms of pure beauty ever. I mean, really, they've done a nice job making a gorgeous phone that you can use and hold in your hand and show off, and people will say, wow, that's pretty. very fast. It's the new Snapdragon 835 processor, which is the fastest processor on the market. It's impressive. If you like Samsung phones, you'll like this, with that one exception or two maybe, with a fingerprint reader on the back, which isn't great, and the kind of bizarre Bixby button, which can't do anything else. But who cares? Just an extra button, right? Eventually, somebody will figure out how to remap it. I'm very impressed, and I think this sets the stage for what Apple will do this fall for their new iPhone. These are the two leaders, aren't they? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's going to be breakable. And so, as always, I buy a little plastic sheath. You know, these are cheap, and they protect it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, should mention there's no replaceable battery in this Samsung. And if you're worried about Samsung phones exploding, I think these are probably the safest phones on the market now, because the last thing Samsung can afford is another Note 7 debacle. The Note 7, of course, had to be recalled, every one of them, at a great cost, billions of dollars to Samsung. So they say we're being extra careful with the battery in here. We're X-raying it. And I think you could assume that this is going to be a very safe phone in that regard. Not worried about that at all. Battery life is good. Not great, just good. It gets you through the day. It does have quick charging, and it does support an SD card. So no removable battery, but they did add the SD card back in, which means you can expand the memory. It comes with 64 gigs, $850, give or take. It's an expensive phone. And you can add an SD. I put a 128-gig SD card here, and I got plenty of storage. Lots of extra storage. Back to the phones we go. Let's go to Encinitas. Melissa is on the line. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
What can I do for you today?
Well, we have extremely slow Wi-Fi in our house, and it used to not be as bad as it's become, but I don't know whether or not it's the service or the equipment that we have going.
You know, you and everybody in the world is suffering from bad Wi-Fi these days, isn't it? Partly because everybody around you is using Wi-Fi. Okay. So one thing you want to know is it my internet service provider? And the best way to do that is to connect directly to, is it cable or DSL?
Cable.
So you could, they gave you a cable modem with an Ethernet jack on it. If you had a cable, of course, most laptops no longer have Ethernet jacks on them, but if you could direct connect it to the cable modem, see how fast it is. That would eliminate the router. That would eliminate Wi-Fi. It would just go directly to the cable modem. And if it's fast enough, if it's living up to its promise, then it's not the cable provider. It's not the DSL, the modem. It's the it's either the router or the fact that just Wi-Fi is getting worse and worse. We're doing more and more with it. I checked the other day on my Wi-Fi. I have 57 devices attached to the Wi-Fi. That's way up from the handful that you might have had a few years ago. And then there's also the neighbors, right? They're blasting Wi-Fi in too. So that's why one of the reasons people have turned to these new mesh Wi-Fi routers. Have you seen ads for these, like the Eero?
I have not.
Okay, so this is an attempt to solve this problem. In the past, what we've said is, well, you want to make sure, what is your Wi-Fi router? When's the last time you bought one?
Well, probably within the last 2 years.
Yeah, so it's pretty new.
We updated it pretty recently, yeah. Even we tried an extender with it, which didn't.
That's what people do. They put an extender on there. The problem with an extender is the extender is half the speed of the wireless access point. That's in order to communicate with it, they cut their bandwidth in half. You have to share it. So that really gets, that's a slow way to do it. It's not going to improve the speed. It's only going to improve the range. In fact, it's going to cut the speed. So, and speed is your issue, not range, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So my recommendation is to take a look at these. They're pricey, but they do solve this problem, these new mesh routers. And the idea is they're like an extender. You have a base station, and then you have units spread throughout the house. The idea, though, is that they don't cut the speed of the extended units, the satellite units, by half, their full speed, because they use a special back channel. And they do a lot of optimization. They kind of pay attention to what devices are attached to which of these various base stations, and they optimize. They're pretty good. Eero kind of pioneered this. Actually, in the consumer mode. There's a company called Ubiquiti that's been doing this for business for years. Ubiquiti has a consumer version called Amplify. There's Eero, E-E-R-O. There's VLOP or V-E-L-O-P from Linksys. Netgear has something called the Orbi. Everybody's doing it. But I'll tell you the ones I've been very happy with of late. And I think I know why. So one of the things these new mesh routers do is they choose the channel and the frequency. There's two Wi-Fi frequencies you can use, 2.4 or bands. You can use 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. And the nice thing about 5 gigahertz, it doesn't travel very far. Why is that good? Because your neighbors aren't going to be interfering. You're not going to see their 5 gigahertz signal, nor are they going to see yours. But that means you need to have a router in every room because it doesn't go through walls very well. So what the Plume, P-L-U-M-E, does is it's a little device you plug into the plug socket. It's tiny. And you put one in every room you want Wi-Fi. They're about $50 each. And then, of course, you have one connected to the cable modem. And it creates a mesh network and little pools of 5 gigahertz. They do 2.4 as well. But the 5 gigahertz works really well. And if you have devices, and most modern devices will work on 5 gigahertz, then you get really great performance and great connectivity wherever you are in the house. So I would look these, plumewifi.com. You can buy them in packs. All of these mesh systems are expensive because you're getting in typically at least three. How many square feet is the house?
It's only 2,400 single story, so there's not a lot of wall space.
The Eero's will go about 1,500 square feet, so two Eero's would be enough for that. Plume's a little different. You want to put one in the your living room, bedroom, office, wherever you're going to use the Wi-Fi. So start with probably a house that big, three would be fine, and then expand out. But you'll see now we're spending $300, give or take, for Wi-Fi, but it does solve the problem. If you don't want to do that, if you don't want to spend that much money, a newer router that does 5 gigahertz better might be good. I like the Asus, A-S-U-S routers. They're quite good, and they are powerful. The problem is, it's like my friend Jim Salter describes it, like being in a bar. When it was just, you with the Wi-Fi in your neighborhood, you could talk in a normal voice, but as more and more routers got in, people turned up the power on the routers, so everybody's shouting, and you can't hear because everybody, like a bar, crowded bar, everybody's shouting. It didn't help; it just made it noisier. So these new devices are a little smarter. They don't shout; they're a little more targeted, and they do it at a frequency that doesn't go through walls, and that's good.
Is it possible to have two different? I guess modems in the same household that connect to the same cable?
No. Yeah. I know that seems like a good solution. In order to do that, what you would do is you have to have one and only one cable modem. But you could use some other form of networking, like power line networking or something over the cable wires called MoCA, to put a extender unit in another room wired. So there are MoCA routers that will do this using the built-in cable. So it's kind of like what you're describing, but the cable company will only let you have one router. It confuses them if you have two routers.
Yeah.
They say, what is going on?
All right.
If you don't want to spend the money on the Plume, I understand it's very expensive, but it does work. Eero, same thing. These things really do solve the problem, but at a high price. And then if you want to save money and you want a good, I think it's worth it. I'm willing to pay for good Wi-Fi. The Archer from TP-Link, the Archer C7 or C9 are very good, inexpensive routers that might improve the situation just by being a better router. But if it's really an intractable problem, I think these new mesh routers really are great. I've tried them all, by the way. They all really do a great job. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, and of course you want to eliminate the ISP first. That's why I suggested connecting directly to the cable modem, because if it's the ISP, nothing's going to fix it. Right? What did you say, Johnny?
Listen.
His name is Johnny Jett, and he is our traveling man. Johnny Jett joins us each week to help us travel better with technology. His website, johnnyjett.com, is a great resource for travelers. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
I chickened out.
On what?
Well, remember we were thinking about going to Cuba at the end of the year, and I thought about it, and I said, yeah, I'm going to wait.
So why did you wait?
Well, politics, frankly. I'm afraid of what, you know, I'm afraid of what might happen. I'm not afraid of what will happen in Cuba. I'm afraid of what happened when I come back from Cuba, and I just don't want to take the chance. So I'm going to wait till the political climate changes. I have a feeling that tourism in general is diminished a little bit, right?
Oh, it definitely has. Most of the airlines have cut back their service extensively. You know, the problem with Cuba is that the infrastructure is just not there.
I don't mind that.
Nice hotels.
Yeah, I know that's...
Most Americans are like really nice hotels. They don't have it there. Right. They're really expensive for the hotels. You know, they don't have Wi-Fi.
No, I know. You can't get on the internet. In fact, there's a whole economy in Cuba of exchanging USB keys with internet content on it. You buy the week's internet. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. No, I was really looking forward to going there because it's, you know, stuck in the 50s. It might be kind of interesting. But I'm worried more about coming back than I am about going. Anyway.
Your media, you could go as a media. You won't have a problem.
Yeah. You see, but this is the chilling effect that this kind of stuff can have. And so that's why I just mention it.
Gotcha.
A little data point.
So I got all kinds of things to talk about. We can also talk about the American Airlines thing that happened today.
What happened with American Airlines? I saw them trending.
Flight attendant, a passenger. First of all, flight attendant, I guess, yanked a stroller from a mother who had a baby or two. And she wanted to bring the stroller on. You can't bring a stroller on to the plane.
Right.
I guess he yanked it from her, accidentally hit her, hit the baby.
Oh,
she was just crying. And then a passenger stood up and, you know, said something. Then the flight attendant basically said, go ahead, hit me. And that part's on video.
Oh,
he's like,
hit me?
Yeah.
What's going on in the world? What is going on? People are so upset these days.
This is why... Passengers hate airlines just because of this. But
don't blame the flight attendants. They've been dealing with, you know, junky passengers too, right?
Without a doubt. A lot of passengers don't listen. They don't care. Everyone's tense. The airlines have created this culture in the last 16, 17 years because they cut back. You know, they cut
jamming you in. There's no room in the seats. You're uncomfortable. Yeah.
They're just trying to make money, and it's not.
And by the way, it's working. They're the most profitable they've ever been. They raised prices because of the gas crisis, and then they never brought them back down again. Gas is cheap, and they're making them. I'm sorry. Don't get me started.
Right. And now everyone has a cell phone, so anything that happens, you know, this stuff
recorded.
Might happen.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
But
that's right.
It wasn't recorded.
We all live in Jerry Springer land all of a sudden.
It just goes viral. Like
cameras
that.
Are everywhere.
So anyway.
Everybody chill and be nice. Let's everybody be nice to everybody else. All right.
Yes.
I don't blame American. I like American Airlines.
American did the right thing, by the way. They're the ones that came out right away and said that, you know, we don't like this kind of behavior of the flight attendant. You know,
apologize.
This is not our
They
apologize. Good. United did the opposite. So that's why United's took off.
Right.
Anyway. Let's talk about
Google
Travel app.
We still want to travel.
Yes.
So let's use a travel app.
Yes. You're going to love this app. It's called asyoustay.com.
Okay.
ASSTAY.com. Did I say you? I forgot the U in there, didn't I?
Asyoustay.com.
IOU.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're traveling and you just want to get a room for a few hours instead of spending the whole nightly rate, you go here. You can put in the hours you want the room.
See, this happens all the time. If you have a layover and there's a hotel nearby, but you got an 8-hour layover, wouldn't you like to take a nap?
Exactly. So actually, I'll put this in the chat room right now and I'll tweet it as well because it's a really cool app. So let's say you're flying from San Francisco to Europe, but you're going to New York for a long layover. Instead of hanging out in the airport or walking around the city aimlessly, you can get a hotel. I just put in 8 hours from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., and
most hotels do this?
They do it now with stuff like this. They weren't doing it before.
It was no easy way for them to do that. Yeah.
Right. But the Park Lane, I've just looked online. It was $329 a night. But if you put in from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., it was only $169. And if I put in less hours, it went down by like $5 an
hour. I've actually, in cases of a long layovers, booked a room overnight just so I'd have a few hours to sleep. It's really a luxury. And a lot of airports have hotels right there.
Right, but for sure, but you want to go in the city. And, you know, you don't want to track, you don't want to bring all your bags with you. So, you know, having this option that's not that expensive, I mean, spending $350 a night for a room, you don't really want to do. But on this, I was finding rooms for $84 for a day. And that's reasonable.
Why don't airports just do this? They would be so smart just to, you know, put 100 rooms in the airport. I guess there are airports with hotels in the airport.
Oh, for sure. I mean, most of them have it.
Like in the airport. I don't mean like outside.
Detroit. Detroit has it right there. I love that. They have a Westin, a really nice hotel.
Because then you go up, you take a nap, and you just go down the stairs, and you're at your gate.
Right.
You still have to go through security again. But still, that's nice. I like that. All right. AsYouStay.com, and it's for iOS and Android.
Yeah, and they do all kinds of – they'll do boutique properties, and they also do the chains like Carlson, Choice, Hilton, IHG, Marriott. And, you know, you can sign up, and they'll give you a promo code, and you get your first $25 off, and then the person who gives it to you is $25 off. So make sure you use my promo code.
Which is? What's your promo code?
It's John D. 2805. It's long. just use your own.
John D. 2805. That's when you're going to run for president, right? John D. 2805.
But, you know, sign up yourself and then use your own promo code, give it out to your friends, and that way you guys
can make your own. When you sign up, use Johnny's, and then you'll have your own for the next time.
That was nice. And by the way, it's on iOS and Android, and they use TripAdvisor ratings.
Oh, good.
But the interface is a lot like Hotel Tonight.
Okay.
It's so much like Hotel Tonight, which most people know about Hotel Tonight. It's great for last minute options. And by the way, this is for last minute. So you got to do it. You can do it for like right now up until 5 days. You can't book.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you want a room for 7 days from now, you can't book it.
Cool. Real quick, we have a minute left or two. A little more. Not 2 minutes.
This is a fun website I learned about this week. I'm sure you even talked about it before on a different program. AutoDraw. AUTO. Oh,
this is a Google experiment. It's so cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome. If you're bored on a plane or in your hotel room, which doesn't seem to happen too often these days, this is a really fun website to take your mind off of things and
You would need internet access to do it. It does require internet access. But yeah, this is neat. So you sketch something and it says, oh, that looks like an airplane. Let me see if I can draw an airplane. I'm not a very good sketch artist, so I'm going to draw an airplane here. And it's not very good, but they say, oh, did you mean this? An airplane? Or this? Or this? And then you get or a camel. I don't know why I'm getting a camel, but they've run out of airplanes, obviously. But isn't that cool? Yeah, autodraw.com. It's a Google experiment, and it's, I guess, artificial intelligence, right? Because it's recognizing what you're drawing.
It's pretty fun.
That's neat. There's an airplane and a happy face. Just for you, Johnny Jet.
now look at you. You're a really good drawer.
I'm a really good drawer.
Artist.
You'll find Johnny Jet, of course, at his website, johnnyjet.com, and on the Twitter, at Johnny Jet, and on the Instagram, Johnny Jet, and at many travel expos. Where's your next travel expo?
Actually, we just finished reading. I've finished speaking at all the conferences. Now I'm just traveling for...
Not just fun.
Now for fun.
Great. Thank you, Johnny. We'll see you next week.
Take care.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Michael Cozio, our musical director, spinning the hits. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, answering the phones, and you. Thank you for being here. Our website, techguylabs.com. That's where all the links Johnny mentioned and links to things I mentioned, answers to questions. Everything gets up on the website, and it's free. No sign up. Techguylabs.com. We even put audio and video of the show afterwards up there so you can see my shirt. 8888 Ask Leo. Patrick, Indianapolis. Hi, Patrick.
This is normally where I would be saying greetings from the chat, Mr. Mayor. MacMan here, but I'm not online right now.
Hey, MacMan. Yeah, we haven't seen you today.
Yeah, it's quarterly computer cleaning, so everything's disassembled and turned
off. Hey, that's a good idea. So you take the whole thing apart, You physically clean it, blow out all the dust.
Mm-hmm.
Do you work on the hard drive, like reinstall Windows and all that stuff too?
Not quarterly. No, I do that every year.
That's a good idea, though. Yeah, you don't need to do it quarterly, but I think, in fact, I don't think, what do you mean, must have pets?
No, it's actually because I have my own, I have problems with my allergies, and because my mother was a smoker for so long, now that I'm living on my own, I still have occasional problems with crud, so
that's to just blow it out every once in a while. Yeah, if you smoke around a computer, you'll be amazed when you open it up.
that's why mom's computer is wrapped in gauze.
You know, my first book that I was writing with Gina Smith, one of the tips, it was a question and answer book, and one of the tips was how to keep dog hair out of your computer by stretching pantyhose over the fan intake. And and because of that, we wanted to name the book, How Do I Keep the Dog Hair Out of My Disk Drive? But the publisher went with 101 Computer Answers You Need to Know instead, and I blame them for the lousy sales. What can I do for you, McMahon?
Well, I'm not, like I said, I'm in my own apartment here right now while I'm working down in the seasonal job here. And I've got a PS4 Pro, and I'm playing Skyrim Special Edition on it, and it's a beautiful game. I have it on my PC, and I'd like to play the PC version because it has mods, and I'd like to also use the 4K part of my nice 4K TV. And I'm wondering what the rate of signal degradation is if I run like a I'd have to run like a 30-foot HDMI cable from the computer to the TV.
30 foot's okay. Get a good cable, but 30 foot's okay.
Okay.
That's about the limit. I wouldn't that's 10 meters. Most experts say after 10 meters with HDMI you're going to get some remember it's digital, so the kind of degradation you get is a little bit weird, but they even make cables, HDMI cables, designed to go even farther, specially shielded and so forth. But 30 feet, that's about right at the limit of what you'd want to do. That's fine. A 10-meter HDMI cable will be fine.
Okay. And even with a 4K signal, that should still be fine?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Okay. You know, it's digital, so generally digital either works or doesn't work. But you can get some stray stuff in there, interference and so forth in the cable if it goes too far, an attenuation, you know, weaker signal. But I think it won't degrade because there is really there's not much degradation that can happen to digital. Either you get all the bits or you don't.
Mm-hmm. And then just also real quick, because it would be an issue here, because I will have to switch to power line Ethernet because right now I've got a 20-foot Ethernet cord stretched across.
Yeah, I did that in my office too, and that's annoying to say the least.
Yeah, how what is your opinion on Powerline Ethernet?
It's okay. It's good. It's improved a lot. Powerline networking, when we first tried it, you know, maybe 20 years ago, was terrible. The idea is you've got wires in the wall. They're the electrical wires, and in theory, you could share those wires. Share the electricity on those wires with Ethernet, you know, with data. So they've invented Powerline networking. It's improved considerably. The latest version of Powerline networking is actually pretty good. You don't get the full throughput of, say, an Ethernet cable, but you'll get 60%, something like that. It works pretty well. I'm surprisingly well. Now, there are some limitations. It can't go across a junction box, so you have to be on the same fuse box. And of course the quality and distance of the wires involved will impact it. But I've used it, a pretty large house and it worked fine. So yeah, give it a try. You know, I mentioned those Plume routers as another way to do it. One of the reasons that's kind of cool is every Plume router has an Ethernet port. On the home router, that's going to be connected to your cable modem or DSL modem or your internet router. But on all the other Plume devices, they're identical in the house. You could plug in to it and have Ethernet coming out of it. So it's a way of getting Wi-Fi distributed Ethernet. Only one device, unless you put a switch on it. But I'm told, I haven't tried this, but I'm told you actually get pretty good throughput. So if your Wi-Fi access was fast enough for you, then you could do it that way too without any wire.
Yeah, I thought about that, but this is my desktop, and I want to keep it at least one wired in.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, Chumley's reminding me he uses the TP-Link, and that's what I got, the TP-Link Powerline networking. I found it worked quite well. You can get them with Ethernet, with hardwire, or you can get them with Wi-Fi. So that's another way to distribute Wi-Fi throughout the house.
Hmm.
And it works decently, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, there's something to look into.
Nice to talk to you, Patrick. Thanks for calling.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for talking to me.
Hemet, California. Ron's next. Hi, Ron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hi. How you doing, Leo?
I am very well. How are you?
Pretty good. Can you put something finally to rest for me?
Yes.
Two Blu-ray Panasonic players, the $80 jobs I picked up at Costco. Works fine for me over the years. But I also have a subscription, and every month I'm going, ooh, 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 right?
Now, do you have a 4K TV?
No, I just have a regular Panasonic Plasma 1080.
Then there's no benefit. You just, the regular Blu-ray is all you need. If you're talking about getting a new UHD Blu-ray player?
Yeah, if it'll boost up my standard Blu-ray.
Nope.
Wasting my money.
Yeah, not necessary. Blu-ray players, remember when they first came out, were very, very pricey. Same thing, by the way, with DVDs when they first came out. Same thing, I remember my first CD player many moons ago, $700. Now you can get a CD player for $1.50 and a couple of coupons. So, as always, price drops. The price on Blu-ray players has dropped well below $100, the 1080p Blu-ray players, the original ones. But these Blu-ray UHDs are now coming out, and of course they're more expensive because they're brand new. No advantage unless you have a 4K TV. So wait till you get the 4K TV. The sad thing is when you get the 4K TV, and you will because, you know, this is where we're moving. In fact, most new high-end TVs anyway are 4K, and a lot of even the low-end TVs are 4K. It's really no point in getting a 4K TV unless your display is more than 55 inches. 55 and up, let's say that. Because a smaller display, 1080p, it looks great, even if you're right up next to it. It's the idea is you want to have 4K on a big screen. And then it really looks spectacular. And I have to say, it does look spectacular, especially if you get a 4K UHD with HDR, the high dynamic range. And the blacks are really dark. The lights, brights, whites are beautiful. And the depth and richness of the color is spectacular. Then you will want not only a UHD Blu-ray player. In fact, there isn't a lot of content. You know, there's a handful of movies in this format. They're more and more all the time. But the new BBC Planet Earth 2, which they reshot in ultra-high def, high dynamic range, is spectacular. When I sit and I watch the Amazon rainforest on my 4K HDR TV using the Blu-ray UHD player, I feel like I'm there. I'm like, it's like you're looking through a window. It's spectacular. And it's the first one where I really say, oh, this is worth it. Just for those DVDs, those Blu-ray UHD discs alone. But you'll also not only have to get that, but you want to upgrade everything. You have to get an AV receiver that's 4K. Otherwise, it won't pass the 4K through. If you use Roku, you'll want to get the 4K Roku, the Roku Ultra. If you, Fire TV, get 4K. Unfortunately, Apple TV does not have 4K. But I bet you this year Apple will announce a new Apple TV that's 4K because that's where everything's moving. But don't begin that cascade until you get a 4K display. And then be aware to take advantage of the 4K display. You're going to want to upgrade a lot of your system. Now, there's no 4K on cable TV, no 4K over the air. It's all over the internet or through these Blu-ray UHD boxes. So those are the things you're going to upgrade. You don't have to upgrade your cable box because there's no point. There's no 4K. I wonder if they'll attempt that. That demand will probably push them to it, but remember the compression they're going to have to use. On the other hand, if you can have 4K streaming down from the International Space Station, 18 megabits a second, that's not bad. Many people have internet speed fast enough to see 4K like that. So these new compression technologies, H.265, are very good. They're very good. So, you know, maybe we'll get more and more 4K stuff. I suspect we will. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We're going to take a break for your local news at the top of the hour. We'll have another hour to go. Lots more to talk about. And if you want to ring me, that's great. If you want to join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. Hogan's Heroes looks the same. Yeah, Xfinity's doing it by streaming, though, right? Or are they going to try to get it over the cable? That would be wild. It's only available. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's an app. I did this with, what was I trying to watch in 4K? Oh, the Olympics ceremonies on my Comcast. And it just froze every 5 seconds. It was unwatchable. You need to have a Samsung or LG smart TV. I have an LG. And you're using an app. So it's not coming. Is it coming over the cable? Actually, I don't know. Ah, here's the phrase you want. We are currently working on a new device that will allow our X1 customers to view more UHD 4K content. So I don't know if it's coming over the cable or it's coming over the internet. My guess would be the internet, right? Thank you, Tommy. Wow, UHD Blu-ray player. Well, yeah, I got my UHD Blu-ray player as a Xbox One S. Not difficult. Our show today brought to you by, ooh, I love this, Square. Do you know about the Square? I remember when Square first came out. I was so excited, and they were offering their free Square card reader, right? You plug it into the headphone jack, and you could take credit card payments. It was huge, and I don't even had any use for it, but I immediately got one. They still offer, by the way, the Square reader, but of course now we've got chips and touch. So they also have the chip card and NFC payment. With the new Square Reader. It does all of them. Square is a really cool company created to make it possible for anybody who wants to take credit cards to do so without a merchant account, without any special setup. Just right away, as soon as you get your Square Reader, you can take credit cards. And it also is cool because you can set up the Square point of sale. If you have an iPad, they have a great point of sale solution. Compatible with iOS and Android. Now, the FreeMag Stripe reader needs a headphones jack. So, you know, obviously it doesn't work with the new iPhone 7. For that, you'd get the $49 new Square reader, which uses Bluetooth LE. So you don't have to worry about a headphone jack. The Square Stand makes a complete point of sale solution. You can sign up in minutes, and then you can take every major credit card. And by the way, they also are great this way. A lot of other people will charge you extra for certain credit cards. Not Square. It's the same price. 2.75% for each swipe, dip, or tap. You can even take keyed-in transactions if, you know, somebody's credit card isn't working. And they'll charge 3.5% and 15 cents per transaction. This is the best deal anywhere. They create custom packages, too, for big businesses. There are no hidden fees. There's no penalties. And there's no commitment. You only pay for what you use. Plus, they pay out fast. They deposit your money within 1 to 2 business days. It's just the best way to take credit cards, no matter what. Even if, you know, you're a business with a point of sale, or you're just an itinerant plumber or carpenter or handyman or web designer. It makes it so easy. Everybody I know now uses Square. I just got a massage the other day, Square. She uses the phone for the music, and then she takes the phone out of the thing and plugs in the Square Reader. It's awesome. Square even has your back with up to $250 a month in free chargeback protection. And if you need on-demand deposits, just 1% of the total deposit amount. The Square dashboard, you know, customers love Square. I love Square because I get the receipts in the mail and all that. But the dashboard for the seller, the merchant, is even better. You can use their PC or an iOS app, and you can see everything, historical and real-time sales data. You could track inventory. You can even send marketing campaigns and create loyalty programs because Square connects with all your favorite apps and services, QuickBooks and Weebly and BigCommerce. They even have an API. So if you got some programming chops, you can write your own. And of course, top-level security and great customer support free of charge. See how Square will work for your business. If you sign up now using our special URL, which is square.com, let me type it in, /tech guy, that's a special Square URL, your first $500 in sales get free processing. Some terms apply. square.com/tech guy. Look at that. If you don't have the Square yet, it's just fun to have. I just went around charging my friends. Said, give me money. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yes. It's time to talk tech. Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. My phone number, 888-827-5225. 5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I told you the website, techguylabs.com, great place to go anytime, even when the show's not on. In fact, better even then, because you can search and find stuff. And we put everything that's on the show up there, so you can click the links. Much easier just to remember that. And there's no sign up. There's no fee. It's not a a pay site. It's techguylabs.com. And if you go there, you'll see a link to our chat room, too, which is always a fun place to be. These are like the kids in the back of the class. But they're very valuable during the show, because it's like, I've got a team here. People know everything. So if I can't answer it, I bet you the chat room can. Back to the phones we go. Vladimir is on the line from Orange County. Hello, Vladimir.
Leo, how are you?
I'm great. I'm wonderful. How are you?
Good. Amazing. A big question I have for you. I'm actually thinking of renting an office space, but they're offering me 1 megabyte per second bandwidth, burstable. And I think the way they measure it is 95 percentile.
Is it 1 megabyte or 1 megabit?
Might be 1 megabit per second.
That sounds better. One megabyte per second is nice. 1 megabit per second is kind of not very fast. It's enough for email, for light web surfing, certainly. And actually, that sounds more reasonable, because they probably don't want you sitting there watching, you know, video, watching Netflix.
Well,
that's
the thing. I do some of the software that I use needs to be connected to the internet most of the times, and I'll be probably watching, you know, videos or things like that, doing research. So I do depend on internet quite a bit.
That won't work for you.
One thing I will try.
Yeah.
It won't work, right?
Yeah, no, it's too slow. 1 megabit is like the really old days, you know, of T1 lines. That was 1.5 megabit. And it really, I think, too slow. You want, I would say, 10 megabits a second to watch YouTube videos. If you want high-def videos, 15 megabits a second. And that's normal. That's normal home internet, at least, right? But obviously what they're saying is, well, there's 20 people using it. We don't have a very fast connection. You know, it may be if you're the only guy in the office. It's one of those kind of shared office spaces.
Yes, one of those tech spaces.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they're probably being conservative, saying, well, if the place is full, you know, we can't promise you more than a megabit each.
Right. Okay, so that probably won't work for me, because that's the only thing that I'm afraid of, is that the overcharges, it's going to be pretty expensive.
Yeah, that's interesting. I bet you that's a little profit center for them, because a megabit's not very fast.
Yeah.
Now, how do they overcharge you, though? There must be also a bandwidth cap. Do they say there's a certain amount you can use?
I think maximum it's 100.
Well, see, there's no way to. It's hard for them to know what speed you're sucking the internet. You're trying to get the internet as fast as you can, so you know, and they're going to give it to you as fast as they can. But there's no way to charge you for overages unless they're also measuring how much data you're downloading. Is there a bandwidth cap? And that's where the overages come in.
Yeah, and that's what they were saying, is, you know, we don't know until you try it for the first month, and then we'll see how much. You know, if it is too much of the internet to use.
So you gotta kind of understand if they're being, if it, you know, do you? It's kind of comes down to your relationship with them. Are they just trying to protect themselves against people who just come in there and watch Netflix all day? They don't want bandwidth hogs using up all their bandwidth. It may just be that, and there may be reasonable. You know, if you're doing this as your work and you got to do, you know, use some bandwidth to do your work, that's reasonable. Or are they? Is this like a profit center for them, and are they trying to gouge you? So it's really going to come down to that, because technically that's not enough, and you will get overage charges, because I can't imagine anybody, you know, that's the old days of megabit. That's the old days. There must be in that agreement, read it closely, a bandwidth cap. You're allowed, you know, a gigabyte a month. That would be kind of typical. Use more than that, we're going to charge you 25 cents per 100 megabytes or something like that. That's what you want to look for. If that's in there, you just have to figure out how much you use. You could also, and this might be what they would want people to do, since it's in town, you could use your cell phone as a hotspot. connect to that instead. The speeds will be faster, much, and probably the prices will be lower for the overages. All cell phone companies now in the U.S. offer unlimited data plans. Thank you, T-Mobile, for kind of putting the screws to Verizon and others. Verizon didn't want to do it, but T-Mobile was eating their lunch. In fact, just saw the new Verizon numbers. They lost 300,000 subscribers last quarter. You know who they lost them to? Of course, T-Mobile. So that's why Verizon, looking at that, saying, well, we better offer unlimited. So you can either use your phone to put it in hotspot mode. And again, sometimes the internet, the cell phone company will charge you $20 a month or some additional fee for hotspot mode. Or you can rent or buy one of these cards. They look like credit cards. I call them MiFi cards, but they have other names for them. And the whole idea there is it's a Wi-Fi access point that gets its data from the LTE network. So it's pretty fast. That will have different rules about how much data you can use. And you can usually attach 5 devices to that. So you could attach your phone and your laptop to it. Just make sure you password protect it so those other mooches in the office space don't bother borrow your internet. Vidak on the line from Sacramento. Hello, Vidak.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome.
How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. Do you remember me?
Yes. Well, I remember that you have a unique name, so I certainly remember your name.
Yes, there you go. The guy from Montenegro.
Montenegro. Ah, I love Montenegro. What a beautiful area. We talked about the Bay of Kotor last time you were on, I remember.
Correct. Yeah. Yes, correct.
So what can I do for you?
I need your help.
Okay.
Yes. I need your help to spend money on headphones.
Oh, I like spending money. You can spend a lot of money on headphones, right?
Sure.
You can buy the headphones they offer at the gas station for $5, or you can go online and spend well over $1,000 on planar magnetic headphones. What do you use the headphones for?
Well, I work in radio, so create like jingles and bumpers and
stuff. Oh, you didn't tell me that, Vidak. That's neat. So I'll tell you what to get. I'm going to tell you exactly what to get. I'm wearing them right now, and they're used in recording studios everywhere. They're accurate. They're extremely comfortable because they're over the ear, but they're very soft. They're open. They're ported, so you can hear people talking to you, which is, in a studio, sometimes something you want. But porting also means you'll have better bass response. So I find these very comfortable. They're from AKG, who make excellent headphones. And they're the K240s. And there's a reference line and so forth. But the basic K240, which I'm wearing right now, is ridiculously inexpensive. I used to spend $200 for these. They're $50 now. $50 or $60, and they're just...
Oh, I've used them, actually.
And every studio has them, and they're cheap, which is probably a good thing, because, you know, headphones get beat up. I am a huge fan of these.
Are they portable at all, Leo?
Well, they don't fold up. They're bulky, because they have those nice pads. Yeah. Sennheiser makes much more portable on-the-ear headphones that are also widely used. Sennheiser's are quite accurate as well. Both of these are... go ahead.
Here's my problem. I do most of the stuff at home. I don't necessarily have access to professional studio equipment at all times. So I'm looking for something that's going to save me from buying JBL studio monitors.
Yes, this would be a good choice. And they're portable enough. You know, you have headphones, will travel. They come in a case. I love them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry, Vidak, I ran out of time there. Yeah, I remember when you were in studio. It's nice to talk to you again.
Yes, I was. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And so, I may be in your neck of the woods on the 6th again. So
good.
Stop by.
Good. I'll look forward to seeing you again. So, yeah, I mean, and in fact, when you're here, I'll let you try these on. I think they're really great. The only thing that wears out is the earpieces, and you can buy them, and John, they're leather, and they crack sometimes after a while. And John goes out, and he buys like half a dozen cloth ones.
That goes around?
Because they're over the ear. But they're super comfortable. I mean, I wear these, you know, 6 hours a day. A lot of studio guys do.
Can you stand listening to music on these?
Totally. I mean, at home, I go home, and I have my Hitman 400 planar magnetic $1,000 headphones, but I would never use those in a studio. Paul Simon. It was funny. I was talking to Paul Simon, and he said, yeah, I don't like to wear good headphones in the studio. I said, what? He said, yeah, because then it spoils me. Because then I hear, you know, I hear it sounds so good in the headphones, and then I listen to the recording. It's terrible.
That's my problem. I have, these are regular home speakers, and they color the sound.
Right. Well, these aren't notoriously flat. If you really want something for mixing, then you want something very flat. Now, by the way, the JBLs, which are the JBLs, are far from flat.
Okay.
but people loved them for mixing. They have a unique sound, and a lot of records have been mixed with those JBL Sentries. If you go to headphone.com, you can look at the frequency curve of all the headphones they sell there. They're very good, and you can find flatter headphones like the Grados. Grados, I don't find them very comfortable, but Grados are extreme headphones, plural. Oh, that's Monster. Jeez. Let me make sure I get you the right website. Don't go to Monster. Don't buy Monster headphones. Those are terrible. I think it's headphones.com, plural. Let's see. Unless Monster bought headphone, that'd be sad. Yeah, headphones.com. They sell headphones, and they're kind of headphone, you know, snobs. So they talk a lot about frequency
headphone
response.
Headphone
snobs is what you want. So you want better frequency response. In fact, if you're going to do it for mixing, they sell headphone amplifiers. You probably want a headphone amplifier as well.
Can these go straight into my MacBook, or need an amp?
Well, yeah, they can, but you would rather have an amp because, for a couple of reasons, the DAC and the amp, they'll sell amps with better digital analog converters. They plug into the USB port on your Mac.
Any recommendation for that?
I would go there. They have a bunch of them that are very good, and they focus on the DAC, because that's what's critical. And you also get more power, so you can drive high impedance headphones better. An amplifier makes, since you don't want to buy, you know, studio monitors and all of that requires, get good headphones and a headphone monitor. You're going to have very good mixing. But remember, you're going to have kind of aggressively left-right stereo mixing. So you're going to have to.
Yeah.
But I think the Grados are flatter. There are a lot of flatter headphones.
I was looking at the, before I got you on the phone, I was looking at the Behr Dynamics.
Excellent.
G770, I think.
Yeah, those are very good. I used Behrs for years. Not comfortable at all.
Not comfortable?
No. They're like the old Koss 440s. They're heavy, you know, plastic headphones. They bug me. It looks like they're making them more comfortable now than they used to. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We're talking headphones with Vidac. Lots of great choices out there. You can spend a lot of money on headphones. I wish I had the ears. You know, I wish I had young ears and I could tell the difference between $1,000 headphones and $200 headphones. I can't anymore. And I have to say, the AKGs for $60, those are pretty great. They're pretty great. Marty in Los Angeles is next. Hi, Leo. Hi, Marty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Marty, come over to the phone, Marty. Talk to me.
Leo?
Hey, Marty. How are you?
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. What's up?
My question is, I have a Galaxy S5 with 16 gigabytes of data, 64 gigabyte memory card.
Yeah.
So everything is fine. The problem is that when the apps update, it reverts back to the internal storage.
Yeah, and this is true of all phone operating systems, but it's true of Android. Microsoft had a lot of problems with this too. SD card storage is a little issue for smartphones, for Android phones. They can't put the apps on the SD card if the app has widgets. The widgets won't work. There are limitations to what an app on external storage can do. So some apps will move themselves back because they wouldn't operate properly. So you can go into the app settings and try to move them to the SD card, but not all of them can be moved to the SD card. And you're right, with 16 gigs internal storage, you don't have enough storage to put your apps on there.
No, but they, I actually am able to put it on the SD card. The trouble is when they upgrade, it automatically goes back to the internal storage. In other words, I get them on the SD
card. Yeah, yeah. You mean the upgrade of the app or the upgrade of this operating system?
No, when they internally upgrade.
They move themselves. Yeah, well, I guess you got to keep moving them.
Exactly. That exactly.
So the way Android solved this in later versions, and I don't know if the S5 supports this, is something called adaptive storage, where they take the SD card and they trick the operating system into thinking it's an extension of internal storage. That solves this problem, but only newer phones do it. The S5, I don't remember it doing it. I think the S7 might have.
Right.
So a newer phone, you wouldn't have this problem. You'd also have more internal storage. The new S8. The only size it comes with is 64 gigs internal. 16 is so lightweight that, yeah, I understand why you want to put it on the SD card.
Right. I was considering getting the
S8. Oh, you would love it. I was not a fan of the S5, to be honest. I loved the S6 and S7. I felt the S, and I loved the S4. I loved the S3. But the 5 was a kind of... Yeah, and mixed feelings about the 5. And if you look at the S8, now it's a lot of money, I understand. But if you look at the S8, I think you'll see it is in every respect a better phone.
I see. I guess that would solve the problem then.
It would solve the problem, yeah.
It's funny how money always solves the problem.
Money will fix anything. Well, but it also the problem is really that SD cards are just not treated the same as internal storage. For a long time, Windows phones came with SD card slots, but Microsoft said, "But yeah, but you can't use it because it just confused the heck out of the operating system." I think part of it is if you put an app on there, an SD card is removable. What happens when you remove it? And the operating system doesn't want I don't want to mess with this. So we're going to put every... I didn't realize they were moving them back. That seems bad behavior. That's a little weird. So somebody's saying, Corrosive's saying, if you can get your S5 up to Android 6, you might be able to use the adaptive storage. It's my experience that's a hardware requirement as well as a software requirement. But do you have the latest version on there?
I have, Marshmallow.
Marshmallow, all right. Well, look in the settings and see if they offer adaptive storage. They may not. You know, that was a... They don't do it anymore, so I don't... Having more internal storage would really solve it. In fact, what I do now, 64 gigs is so much that I don't bother moving my apps. And apps do work better if they're in the internal storage. But I put all the data, pictures, music, all the data, audiobooks, they all go to the SD card. And that leaves enough room easily with a 64 gig phone. I have 168 apps on here. Doubt people need more than that. I have a lot of apps on my phone. But, and, you know, 64 is a lot. I think Samsung may not do adaptive. Was that a Google-only thing? And it might have only been on the Nexus phones. It was... I'll have to look it up. But, yeah, get a new phone, Marty. It's time. You've had that one for a while. Cesar in San Bernardino. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Cesar.
Hey, Leo, how you doing, sir?
I am well. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for taking my phone call, man. This is cool. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate your calling. It'd be a very boring show if it was just me talking the whole time. What can I do for you?
Yes, you know what? My brother has an iPhone 6S Plus. My wife has... Well, we all have iPhones. And, you know, when you send text messages back and forth to one another, I guess you can put other people in it and then it's a group.
Groups, your blue bubbles. But the problem is, if you're going to do group messaging with Apple's Messages app, which is what your iPhone uses.
No, not the blue bubbles. Not the blue bubbles.
You get green bubbles. Those are Android users. And they can't be part of the group message.
No. We all have iPhones.
Yeah.
And we all have.
Are you saying some people can't? Well, tell me what your problem is. I shouldn't have jumped the gun. Go ahead.
No problem. No problem. We all have iPhones, but our problem is that when you share videos, the videos are horrible. You know?
I know. You know why? It's trying to save bandwidth.
But we're unlimited.
Yeah. No, I know. But it's trying. And I know. But it's still trying. And same thing happens with images. God. It downsamples it. It downsamples it. So if you want to share videos, better to put the video somewhere and share a link. It's squeezing the video down. Otherwise, you know, you don't want to text message 100 megabyte video. It'd take forever. And in fact, pretty typically, my videos, when I try to send people videos on Apple's messages, it just fails. It says, I couldn't send that. What are you, crazy? So, yeah. It's shrinking it to save space. It does the same thing with images, which it makes them look fine on the screen, but they don't look good anywhere else. So email them. You know, email the originals or upload the originals. If you use Apple's photos, you can actually share a link to them on iCloud. Something like that. I thought what you were going to ask about, and this is a common problem, is Apple discriminates against Android users. They can't be part of the group because they're green bubbles, not blue bubbles. I blame both Google and Apple for this. Apple needs to make messages available on all platforms. Of course, they never will because they want you to buy an iPhone. Google does have a cross-platform messaging solution, several. Allo, Google's Allo Messenger, Hangouts. But Google can't really figure out what it wants to do with messaging, so it has a very fragmented strategy. Somebody should solve this. I guess if you all, you know what you could do? All use WhatsApp or a similar messaging program that will let you do higher quality videos. That might be the better solution. And since it's all in the family, you can issue a decree, Caesar. I decree WhatsApp. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That'd be a solution. So the S7 can do adaptable storage, but not the S5. All right. Yeah. Yeah, Google took SMS out of Hangouts, unless you're a Google Fi user, which I am. But they haven't put SMS in Allo. Allo's the perfect solution. Just get rid of every other messaging app on Android made by Google, which makes several, and do it as Allo. 8888 Ask Leo. Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo's coming up with his gadget of the week in a second. But meanwhile, we got Mike on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate I am it. Great. Thank you.
So I'm looking for a new laptop. Actually, I'm looking for a laptop. I haven't had one for a while. And I'm looking possibly the Chromebook.
Love the Chromebook. You got to understand its limitations. You know, benefits.
This is what I want to. Okay.
Go ahead.
This is what I want to do with the Chromebook, though. Like you said, limitations. I have a whole bunch of DVD tapes that I want to digitize, and I want to do that through the Chromebook.
Not a good choice.
Okay.
So for that,
and also use
In general, you know, I think a Chromebook is a better choice for most of what people do on a computer, which is surf, read email, you know, that kind of thing. Write papers. Mm-hmm. But there are some specialized applications like digitizing video that require hardware to convert the video, you know, into bits that can be edited, or at the very least, the kind of port that you can do that with, and the software. And maybe I'll have to look around. It's possible there. Do you want to make a DVD? What do you want to do with the video?
Well, I have a whole bunch of tapes for my kids and all the videos that we shot through the years, and I just want to save it.
No, you can't because those are analog. Those are analog tapes, so you need an analog to digital card or converter, and you need a lot of storage. And Chromebooks don't come with a lot of storage because the whole point of them is everything's online. So what you want to do really does need a Windows or a Mac, but probably a Windows PC, I'm sorry to say. You'll need to get a box that connects to your – is it a VCR? Is it VHS tapes?
They are those little DVD tapes. I got a PC9 camera.
Okay. So those DVs sometimes are analog, sometimes video. The most DVs are digital video, right? So those you'll just need a DV. Do you have a DV player still?
Just the camera that I took the videos with.
And it probably has FireWire out of it?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So you're going to need a FireWire to USB or FireWire to Thunderbolt converter. Because nobody makes laptops with FireWire anymore. So you need a converter. And then if you've got that, actually, a Mac might be the best choice because they come with Thunderbolt ports, which are faster and will do a better job with FireWire. They're more analogous to FireWire, but USB 3 is pretty fast. So
I'm mainly a PC guy. So I'm not a big Mac person.
Okay. So I think the best laptop manufacturers out there right now are Dell. I love their XPS line. You're going to be spending a lot more than a Chromebook. But you can get it for under $1,000. But the Dell 13-inch XPS is fantastic. It also has fast USB, and I think it has a Thunderbolt port, which means it'd be very easy for you to get a converter. I also like, but to a somewhat lesser degree, Lenovo, HP, Asus, A-S-U-S, and Acer, A-C-E-R. Those are my top five. But Dell's XPS is... Go ahead.
You also have some other questions, because I do a lot of Photoshop work.
Yeah, there's a Photoshop-like Chromebook program. Remember, Chromebooks only do what you can do in the Chrome browser. And there's a Chrome browser extension called Polar, P-O-L-A-R-R, two R's, that is it has layers. It does a lot of what Lightroom would do, but it's not Lightroom. It's not Photoshop. It's the best you can get in a Chrome browser extension. So, yeah, right. you need Windows. You need Photoshop. You need Lightroom. By the way, highly recommend the $10 a month photographer subscription to the Creative Cloud. You get both Lightroom and Photoshop for $10 a month, which is a very good deal.
Photoshop is now done by subscription, so once you get it loaded up, do you still need to have an internet connection to use Photoshop?
Yeah, periodically you do. You have to get it approved. But not all the time.
Once it's approved... Once actually use it,
yeah.
The internet connection.
Not all the time. I think every once in a while it might check the internet. You have to run the Creative Cloud plugin, which periodically checks the internet. I don't know what the timeout, if it's a month or a day or a year. I don't know what it is, but I imagine at some point it times out. Slomo's saying once a month you have to sign in.
Okay, gotcha.
So that's just go ahead.
The last question I have for you is. Is there a fast scanner to scanning your old photos? Is there a turbo scanner?
You bet. My favorite is the Epson Perfection scanners for photos. They have photo scanners that let you do... I have one right behind me. Are they prints?
They're actual prints, yeah.
Yeah. The Epson Fast Photo is exactly what you want. It has a feeder. It's expensive.
How long does it take per photo?
It's pretty quick. You can do as fast as 1 second. You're probably going to not want to use the fastest mode. It depends on the quality you want. But they're quite fast. But because it has a feeder, you can put it in and walk away.
Oh.
Epson Fast Photo. Pricey, but it does a great job. Now, if this is a one-time only thing, which for most people it is, I got a box of photos and I got a box of VHS tapes or DV tapes, sometimes sending it to a service bureau and having them convert it is worth your time. But if you think you're...
I looked into that, but the problem was definitely with the video. They're not, because some of the tapes are not always filled up, and they're just going to let it run through, and they're not going to edit it for you.
No.
So it's kind of like, I want it all together when it's done.
If you're willing to take the time and spend a little bit of money to do this, you're always going to do a better job than a service will.
Okay.
But the Epson Fast Photo is pricey. You're going to spend some money on the connection to the laptop. The laptop itself is going to be pricey. This is it adds up.
The scanner, what's pricey when you're saying pricey?
I don't remember the price of it, but I think it's several hundred dollars. Let me see. Epson Fast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's amazing. It's definitely the fastest way to do it, but it's not an inexpensive scanner. Yeah, $649.
Oh, $649 for the scanner.
$650 for the scanner.
Okay.
You can if your time isn't too valuable, you can get a manual. You know, Epson's Perfection scanners will do one at a time, do a very, very good job. It's just you're paying extra for that sheet feeder that can run all those photos through. It's more useful, frankly, if you have a lot of stuff. And I should mention Epson is a sponsor. I just read the Epson ad read. They're a sponsor of this show. But I am a little partial to them for other reasons as well. I've used Epson forever. The Fast Photo is kind of amazing. It's designed to do high-speed photo scanning. They say it's the world's fastest. 600 DPI. as fast as a print a second. That's pretty good. And the feeder means you could put 100 prints in and walk away. You know, do it overnight. Not cheap. Not cheap. So, you know, make sure you either have a lot of photos or this is an ongoing project. Maybe get your neighbors and family and friends to subsidize the cost of the scanner. And my favorite Windows laptop out there right now. There's some really good ones. Actually, I should mention Microsoft also makes very good laptops. I have a Surface Book. They also make the Surface Pro. But I love those Dell XPSs. They're border-to-border screen. Just gorgeous. Lenovo makes some very good ones. Those ThinkPads are you know, business for business, there's no better. Asus and Acer both are doing very interesting things like the two-in-ones that fold over and so forth. So there is more creativity and variety in Windows laptops now than anything else. There's just a ton of interesting stuff happening. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Hey, the GizWiz, Dick DiBartolo, he's coming up in a few minutes. Don't forget our website, techguylabs.com. You don't have to write anything down. I'll put links up. Actually, James DeRuvo is putting the links up as I speak. We also put audio and video after the fact, and that's free. There's no sign-up. techguylabs.com. Our final segment of the day, coming up with Dick DiBartolo right after this. How long? Well, this has been going on for a long time. In fact, how long have I known Dick DiBartolo? I think almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were young men when we started.
We were. We said, hey, let's do this. What is this podcasting? And he said, no. Podcast.
Dick DiBartolo is Mad's maddest writer. And truthfully, I've been a fan of Dick since I was a little kid. He started when he was a high schooler writing for Mad Magazine, and I wasn't much younger reading his stuff and the usual gang of idiots and all of that. I just love Mad Magazine. But what I didn't know is that all this time he's been a gadget fanatic. He's loved the gadgets. You didn't own it, but the first guy to use an answering machine.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't afford it.
Bill owned it. Bill Gaines, exactly. The publisher of Mad Magazine, and first guy to figure out. In fact, I'm sure this is true. The answering machine prank call.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, Dick joins us every week because he wants to share a gadget or a gizmo he's found. He's the GizWiz. What do you got?
Yeah. So it's a travel gadget. That's not humiliating. Okay, you and I have done some travel gadgets. You know, the ostrich pillow thing where you stick your head in it. And then there was the pillow you blew up.
Yeah.
And it took up all the room between you and the seat in front of you and coach.
You'd just be so embarrassed to use it, frankly.
Embarrassed to use. Okay, so I was reading, I was doing some travel read-ups because I did a thing for ABC. And I found this airplane footrest hammock. Okay. So I bought one. They're like $14 to $15 on Amazon.
So I bought one, he says.
So I bought one. And then I think I have no flights coming up. So I keep reading the reviews and someone said, I use it on my snack table when I'm watching television. Just hang it over the table. And then you put your stocking feet in this little hammock so that you can rest them off the floor. So I dragged out my little TV table and put the hammock over it.
What does it hang from?
It hangs from, on an airplane, it'll hang from the snack tray on.
Oh, yeah, they have a little coat hanger or something on it.
Yes, exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. At home, just run it over the top of the table, and then it has an adjustment for any height you want. Now, some people adjust it so they can put their calves in it, but most people just rest their feet in it.
You know, so, I think that of all the things you've mentioned for improving air flight, this actually looks like the best.
And no one, maybe your immediate seatmate might see
it. Yeah, nobody's going to mind, though.
Nothing's going. Yeah. I think they'll probably just say, oh, my gosh, that's clever. Where'd you get
idea.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to, why are you inflating that pillow into my space? And it's very cheap. It's the one I bought was $14 called Me Young Airplane Footrest Hammock.
Wow.
And it rolls up. It comes in a little travel sack. It's like 8 inches by 3 by 2. But when you roll it up, it's a tiny little tube.
I might get one of these.
You can throw in.
We've got some long flights coming up. This might be a good idea. You haven't tried it on a plane yet.
No, just on my snack table. But I have Dennis walk by with a tray, and he serves me dinner, and I feel like...
Occasionally pulls you from your seat and beats you. Yeah, it's great. It's like actual air travel. Yeah. Well, this is not bad. And $13.99, I think we could all... I might buy two, one for me and one for my honey.
Oh, one for your right foot and one for your left foot.
Oh.
Be crazy.
Wow. Go nuts. You'll find more information about this along with many other gadgets and gizmos. Dick is always talking about them on ABC News and all over the place, including his own podcast, the GizWiz podcast at gizwiz.tv. But the main website is gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.BIZ, gizwiz.biz. Yes. And while you're there, you can click the button that says the GizWiz visits the tech guy to find this. But while you're there, click the other button that says something like, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
Play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. I'll talk to you next week.
All righty. Indeed, you
I'm
will.
I'm going out to get some Mexican food. Bye.
Is it my shirt? It's my shirt,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I look like a taco truck. I know.
I think you have a little sauce on the collar.
You'd never know. That's the beauty of this. You could eat a burrito in this and half of it could fall out and it would look the same.
You don't need a napkin.
Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, bye.
Let's take, I think might be the last call of the day here, Howard in Murrieta, California. Hey, Howard.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm having a problem with my email. A few years ago, my company dissolved and I picked up their computer, their laptop.
Okay.
And I continued to use Outlook.
Okay.
And I changed my email address to a Gmail account.
Good.
And everything worked great for years. And now I'm getting a pop-up when I go to email. And it says server@popgmail.com. And then it asked me to put my username and my password. And if I don't do that, my email sort of goes down. And when I put my username and password in, it doesn't take it. And then I get an email from Google that says someone has your password.
Ay, yay, yay, caramba. you don't have two-factor turned on?
No.
Okay. Two-factor can cause a problem sometimes, and there are ways around that. They use temporary application passwords and so forth, but that's not the problem here. I would clear out all your settings. I'm guessing there's some setting left, or it could be there is – I bet you at work they used an Exchange server. They had their own server for this email. I'm guessing.
When I go on to sign on to my computer, it still has – the company name and all of that.
Yeah. I wonder if that's part of the issue, that the Outlook settings, there's still some leftover stuff, or there's an Outlook plugin that's running that's an Exchange server. But it is true that Google will ask you for your password, but it should accept it. So that's right. What's puzzling me. I know what I would do. Make sure, here's another thing. Check your date and time.
Okay.
This is not an uncommon problem because of the way security works on secure sites. In an older computer, the clock might not be accurate. So make sure your clock is accurate.
No, I checked that. So okay. That is accurate.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause
if
what
it,
was the other thing you said that was turned off?
I would... this is an interesting puzzle. Gmail is generally, of course, designed to use in a web browser. And when you open your browser and access your Gmail, does it act normally?
Say that again now?
Have you ever accessed Gmail from your browser? That's how it's designed.
Yes, yeah. I have.
And that acts completely normally, right?
It does.
Yeah.
Yes. And I even changed my password just to see if that was
and that worked.
Maybe a problem.
I think your Gmail settings need to be updated. Go to Gmail's help section, Google's help section. Get the IMAP settings. Those will work better. I think you're using the POP settings. And redo all the settings in there. It won't delete any mail that's in there. It won't cause a problem. But it might solve this problem. I think it's a settings issue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for joining me. See you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.